we ended off Shovavim discussing the sugyas of Shichrus, of getting drunk, and losing discretion. Losing discretion. Sometimes the biggest mistakes people make are when they lose their discretion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man with das, with the prize jewel of mankind is that they have the ability to make wise decisions. And there are other things other than alcohol that can alter a person's das, alter a person's perspective. I'd like to be nichnas a little bit into this sugya. This is a sugya of the times. It's not a sugya that's per se nogeya to the yeshiva, but I think that we have to always be increasing our chachma to what's going on in the world, because we're living in a world, we're not living in a ghetto anymore, and the nisyanus of the generation are our nisyanus. And today there is something, I think they call it the opioid epidemic or crisis. There's a lot of things going on. We have legalization of marijuana, recreational marijuana, medical marijuana, and the world is changing. And we have to understand why this is happening. Why is it that when somebody gets a prescription drug, it's so difficult to renew their prescription? It has to be exactly on a certain day, and with this ID and that ID, there's so much overdose of even prescription drugs. And obviously, this is a sugya that's very big and could be covered in so many different ways, but we're trying to understand the chachma behind what's going on. We are not going to be discussing the social elements of drugs, which there are many social elements, but we are going to discuss what all these drugs do for people, because what I found, at least in my travels, people speak to me from other places, from yeshiva, from anywhere and everywhere I go. I find that the biggest reason people are doing these things is not for social reasons, at least not in our circles. It could be that in California, by the beach they are, or at concerts they are, I don't know. But what I've seen, the nisayon of these issues is not a social one. So let's try to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, and why these things have to be seriously thought about. The first thing that I would like to discuss is that life is manageable. Life must be manageable. The Ramban says, based on the pasuk, Hashem tzaddik yivchan. Hashem only tests somebody who's a tzaddik. Meaning, just like a teacher, any good teacher prepares a test based on the material that was covered in class, right? If there's something that goes wrong and everyone gets something wrong on the test, then a good teacher, you know, he might have a big ego, he doesn't want to admit it, but if everyone gets something wrong, even that guy with the giant glasses, and those, when I was growing up, big glasses were very nerdy, now they're more in, but, you know, and the pocket protector, whatever, the guy who's shaykh to the books, if he doesn't get it right, something's wrong with the class. Something's wrong with the teacher. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never, never gives somebody a test that's not cut and tailored for what they can handle. That is a principle from the Ramban based on the nisyonos of Avraham Avinu. Every one of the tests that Avraham Avinu had, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that he could succeed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him those tests so that he could flourish, so that he could get a good grade. Hashem tzaddik yivchan. And if life would be too overwhelming, then we wouldn't be able to function. There's actually an amazing Sefer Hamidos. The Sefer Hamidos was written by the Dubna Magid. The Dubna Magid was in the time of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon even asked the Dubna Magid for Musar. And I was once in a doctor's office and I brought the Sefer Hamidos with me and I tried to just go through as much of the Sefer as I could, and I found this gem. It was worth going through the whole Sefer just for this gem. I actually don't remember the rest of the Sefer. I only remember this incredible Vart. The Pasuk says, amazing. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, in Kuf Lamed Tes, hoidecha. Ki minoresecha niflesi. Right? I will thank you, Hashem, because from your awe, from all the things that you're that give you that create awe from you, I'm in wonderment. I'm in wonderment. That's how I would translate the pasuk. The Dumna Magid says no. The word niflesi could also mean that you distance me. Lo niflesi mincha. Nifles could mean distant. Ahoy decha! I thank you, Hashem. Why? Ki minoresecha, from your scary presence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says. It's so incredibly awesome. The malachim, he says, stands in front of Hashem and they shvitz, and all of their shvitz turns into what's called Nahar Dinor. The river of Dinor is from shvitz of malachim, who are standing there like this. They can't move with a pachad of Bayri Eilu. Says the Dumna Magid, David saying to Hashem, Hashem, thank you for letting me have space, not making things overwhelming for me, letting me function in this world in a healthy way, that I can do things, I can make decisions, I can live, I can enjoy, I can feel, I can be. Thank you for giving me a healthy environment. Ahoy decha! I thank you, ki minoresecha niflesi, you distanced me from an unhealthy fear. An unhealthy fear. And there are some times that people have unhealthy fears in all areas. Some people are afraid of heights. Some people are afraid of planes. Some people are afraid of spiders. Some people are afraid of the boogeyman, still. Right, I'm embarrassed to say. But still afraid of the boogeyman. We all have fears, right? And when a person has a fear that they can't function with, that's not good. They can't do anything then. And it can even happen in Ruchnius. In Ruchnius, my mashgiach, Rav Naftali Kaplan, once told somebody, he said, you can't learn Musar Svar. Why can't he learn Musar Svar? He says, because you take them too seriously. He says, is that bad? He says, no, it's a great thing that you take them seriously, but nobody takes them that seriously. Because you take them so seriously, you're only allowed to read Chassidish Svarim. Why? Because imagine if someone would take these things so seriously, they wouldn't be able to live in a healthy way. There's a healthy distance. Another a Rebbe of mine told me that his roommate was a Talmud of Rav Volba. He was in with him in yeshiva. And one time, he said that Rav Volba said, this is the biggest yisayit in Musar. And then he goes, Rav Volba said, this is. By the way, that's a great way when you speak. You always have to make this like the most important issue. Right? My father's in marketing. That's what we do with everything. Everything is, this is the most important shmooze to be here since the beginning of Adaras HaTorah. Right? That's how we do it. Right? But if you're a kid sitting in the crowd, you're saying, Rav Volba said, this is the biggest. Rav Volba said, doot, doot, doot. They took him away. Rachmana Litzlan. Rav Volba says all these things are the biggest thing. Too much. He came back to yeshiva after he went somewhere to be taken care of, and Rav Volba said, only Chassidish Svarim from now. Only Chassidish Svarim. And the reason is because life is meant to be a proper challenge. A challenge that we can handle. But when things become overwhelming, then it's not doable. It's not doable. And there's a sefer called Binas Midas that was written, compilation of the Gedolim's attitude towards mental health issues and pills and all sorts of various mental illness and challenges. And it tells a story over there of a Yid, a Magid Shir, who would prepare Shir for a group of people, but he didn't just prepare the Gemara. He needed to see every Marsha. He needed to see every Maharam. He needed to look at all of the Yalkut Mefarshim. Because what if someone asks this? 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 Hours and hours for a very simple shir. Okay, the man did not get anything wrong on the Gemara, but his family was watching him, literally was destroying his life preparing for this shir. Destroying his life. Hours, we're talking 10, 15 hours on something that he could have prepared in an hour, 2 hours. He's capable, he knows it. And he started taking medication and it saved his life. It saved his life because life was not fair at that point. life was not fair. Life was not manageable in the truest sense of the word. And it saved his life, and now he gives the shear, and he prepares for an hour or two like he's supposed to. He's functioning in his life. And this is the greatest gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this generation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this generation tools to be able to function when you're not able to function. And obviously a person has to know and get a professional opinion whether or not they can function or they can't function, but it's a tremendous bracha. It's a tremendous bracha. Just like I have my inhaler, Ventolin, in this generation, there are so many times that I could not breathe. Mamish can't breathe. It happens many, many times a year. I take a puff. It's a real steroid. Right? I'm not allowed to run the Olympics because of this thing. It's unbelievable, though. It really, in Modim, I have in mind, thank you for being in the generation of Ventolin. It's an incredible thing because my lungs can't function here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu created tools that allow functioning. And there are other types of not functioning. Not just anxiety, like we have this fellow who was preparing the shir, but also in this generation, people are able to concentrate. People are able to concentrate. In earlier generations, people just said, can he follow or can't he follow? And that's how they defined intelligence, is if you could follow or you couldn't follow. Right? Today, b'chesed Hashem, so many highly intelligent people, people who are so much more intelligent than the people who don't need this, have tools, have medicines that are able to allow for concentration that they could manage in life, that they could function in a healthy, normal way. It's a matana. It's just like Ventolin, Baruch Hashem. And it's become so accepted. I picked up Rav Asher Arieli in the car. I think it was on Purim, actually. I really did him a chesed because somebody with a pink shirt grabbed him going, Rabbi! Rabbi! And I think Rav Asher goes, remember that you're a Ben Taira. Remember that you're a Ben Taira. And then Rav Asher came into my car. And it was really exciting. I even asked him for a vart on the Megillah. I figured I'm driving him, but I forgot that this is the ultimate insult to, it's Yadua from Rav Nachum, his father-in-law. He said he wanted it written on his tombstone that he never learned Maseches Megillah because they were always in the sugya. So I asked Rav Asher, he goes, what? I'm supposed to tell you something about Purim? Well, I just read the Megillah. I have nothing to say about Purim. So it was worth it for that, Maisa. But then it continued. Then I said, help, maybe you want to hear something from me. Right? And then I just like, why not? He's not going to remember who I am. And then at the end, I was telling him, you know, there's somebody I know who's struggling with learning, with sitting and concentrating and all these things. And Rav Asher Arieli, I asked him for a bracha. And it was amazing to see how much he cared. But the first thing he said is, did you try Ritalin? What? Right? And it was amazing. You should know. I'm not positive about this, but this makes sense based on everything I know about Rav Asher. When he got out of the car, he was standing in his place. And I'm kimat sure that he was saying Tehillim because I asked him for a certain bachur to have him in mind. A bachur who needs help concentrating. And I'm sure because of HaKaras HaTov for the ride, he had said a tefillah ksara right over there. But these things are gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there's so much more that can be done today to allow people to function in a healthy way, to allow people like me to run on a treadmill. I can run on a treadmill, thank you to Ventolin. There are times where I push my limits and then I have to take my nebulizer, but I have all these things at my disposal, Baruch Hashem. And that is the bracha of this generation. But now we have to go to the problem that's taking place over here. And it's a very big problem. There are thousands of people in our generation who are turning to things because they're not willing to live with a life of challenge, of struggle, of growth. They're not managing, but not because they're not managing in a clinical way. They just don't want to choose that path of managing. They have trouble sleeping on a plane, they take a Xanax. They have trouble with stress, they put some weed in their e-cig, and it's all good. Right? They have all sorts of ways of dealing with things. Many people feel that life needs to be painless. And anything that kills the chill has to be numbed. I'm going to read to you something from a dear friend of mine who was reflecting on years of substance abuse. And it was very interesting because I spoke to this person while I was preparing the shmooze, and I saw that the words on my page were the same words. The word numbing. Harmful activities can be compared to a Band-Aid covering a deep cut. When one has a serious wound, it requires medical attention. Simply concealing it with a bandage will not alleviate the injury. Similarly, when one experiences emotional pain, he tends to cover it up by engaging in alcohol abuse, drug abuse, or any other activity that provides instant gratification. He may even pretend that the pain doesn't exist and only focus on the problem above the cut, which we can liken to the Band-Aid. The Band-Aid hides and numbs the cut pretty well, and sometimes can cover it so well that you can't even tell the cut was there. And he continues about what happens to people who have wounds, but are just placing Band-Aids on these things. Things that could use surgeries and stitches, but you're just placing a Band-Aid on top. So let's try to understand the role of pain. I would like to be, basically what I'm going to be talking to you about is coping with pain. This is the major sugya of this generation. It is not about social use. It's about understanding the role of pain. Let's start with bodybuilding, right? Bodybuilding. So what we know about this, and it's amazing, and I just spoke to a trainer before just to verify, just make sure that I'm not a total Amma Aretz in these things. But in training, what happens is a certain process, which is incredible. The way the body works that Hashem made. A person tests his limits, right? And the next morning, it's pretty hard to move. And that's a good thing. Because what actually happens is the muscle tissue breaks and it reconstructs itself. And this process is supposed to happen over and over again. Suddenly, Yankel has a six-pack. Where'd that come from? Well, over time, push up, sit-up after sit-up, and that pain. But then it reconstructs itself. The pain creates a breakage, but that breakage is a building in the person. That's one example. Another example, a person who plays guitar. This is Niflos Habore, okay? All the novice guitar players, right? The guitarists who are just starting out, it hurts their fingers. But slowly but surely, the skin gets rubbed off and recreates itself and creates calluses that a person now can play with literally something that you could have bought in a music store, these things. It's unbelievable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has it that the pain creates strength. And violinists have a different matzav. Incredible. They have a different type of string. Actually, the nerve endings on the end of their fingers die in order that they're able to play the violin without any pain. The body itself responds to these things. And I was speaking to someone once, I was on a Jeep tour, and I was speaking to a guy who lives in the, he's very into the fact that he lives in the wild. There actually was a man there who used to be a big hedge fund guy, and he just, like, I don't know if he went crazy, he probably did. He decided he just lives there. He was like literally a caveman. We found him. He's just wearing a few begadim to cover himself, and he lives literally in the wild. We saw him, an Israeli fellow, interesting guy. But people live in the wild. He said an amazing thing. He said that his kids rarely get sick. Why? Because they're always getting bitten by bugs. And it creates immunities. You would think, you know, ticks or this, you know, Lyme disease, who knows? No, when a person is exposed to these things, it actually generates a certain amount of strength, certain immunities. And another example, Purell, okay? I'm a big fan of this hand stuff, especially in America. You put your hands in and it goes automatically onto your hands. It's gavaldic. But what they found was something fascinating. People started getting more sick. Now, how does this happen? If everybody's killing all the germs, then where is all this going? Why is everybody getting sick? The answer is, and this is an amazing discovery, is that people need to be exposed to germs to build immunity. If you try to keep someone away from all the germs in the world, they're not able to fight germs. Sounds like a Tarta de Sastra. But that's exactly what happens in the body. And this is what happens in Ruchnius also. In Ruchnius also, there's a beautiful Michtav from the Pachad Yitzchak, Simon Kufchav Ches in his Michtavim, where this person, he felt that Gedolim are just like born tzaddikim. They're born tzaddikim and everything about them is just easy, and if I could be a Gadol, things would be simpler. And he said, you're making a terrible mistake. He says, Akol Meshechachim al Tyrus Lashon Shel HaChafetz Chaim Zatzal. Everyone speaks about the Chafetz Chaim, that he didn't speak any Lashon Hara. Aval mi yodea min kol ha-milchamas. Who knows how many wars he had? Ma'avkim, struggles. Michsholos, stumbling blocks. Nefilas, falls. V'nesigos la'achar, and setbacks. Shemotza ha-chafetz chayim b'derech ha-milchama im yitzro hara. The Chafetz Chaim was the Chafetz Chaim because he had wars. He had struggles. And he says to this young man, Bizman shemargish b'sayres ha-yitzohara. If you feel a storm of challenge with your Yetzirah, Dalecha shebizeh hincha misdamel agdolim. Then you're like a gadol. Harbe yoser me'asher b'shah shata nimsa b'mnucha shlema shata rotzeba. If things are calm for you, you're not like a gadol. If you don't have challenges, if you don't have places to grow in your midas, if you don't have places to grow in tyra, if you don't have places to grow in learning, then just know you are not like a gadol, because gedolim fight and fight and fight and fight. And he says this is pshat in the pasuk in Mishlei Chaf Dalet Tzayin, Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. He says a very strong lashon over here. He says the tipshim, the fools, read this pasuk the following way: that a tzadik is capable of falling seven times, because he's such a tzadik, he keeps getting up. And he says that's the way of fools to touch the pasuk that way. Aval chachamim yoidim heitev. The chachamim know well. Shakavane hi shemahus hakima shel tzadik hi derech sheva nefilas. The only way to become a tzadik is to fall. It doesn't mean that a person has to do averis to fall. It means to be challenged. Ups, downs, days you love it, days you hate it. Days you're moving forward, days you're moving backwards. That's what makes someone a tzaddik. Every nefila creates strength. Strength in the person. And a person who numbs himself from all these experiences remains tiny. Remains tiny. Because the growth is created from these experiences themselves. And it's true in relationships also, Rabosai. There's something called, in a relationship, changing a system. Changing a system. I'll give you a mashal. Let's say you have a guy who's a pushover. He's a pushover, right? And he doesn't like that people are always telling him what to do and taking advantage of him. And now he tries to stick up for himself. And he starts saying, no. So all of a sudden, you know what's going to happen? He's breaking a system. This is going to come with a price. Like, you're saying no? No, no, here I go, bye. What's going on? They don't believe him. Says, no! Whoa, look who's barking like a dog! And it's going to be that way for maybe 3 months until people start respecting him. When you change something to new, and it works this way with changing relationships with siblings, with parents, you're changing something, you're going to have something painful so that the muscles could grow new, so that there could be an adaptation in the relationship itself, so that you can get strength. And the people who are cowards, who don't do this, miss out on it. Their whole lives are stuck in this feeling of being helpless because they weren't willing to have painful moments and even painful extended periods of time. They lost that strength. They lost it. So now let's get really into the inyanim over here. Let's get into the inyanim. Let's try to understand. I want to try to take something seriously. You're going to think this is a joke, but I take this very seriously. The word for people who have, let's say, too much, who have any marijuana, it's called being stoned. Stoned. And I would like to darshan this word because I think there's a lot of amkus over here. So we're going to say a drasha about stones. Stones. Okay, because it's the Malbim discusses it. So we have to know what the Malbim's opinion is on this. Let's first understand Major Mechanchim, a major mechanich in America who deals with Bachrim who are involved with these things. He said something amazing. These people, they are numb. Numb. But not only while they're taking these things, for 2 weeks afterwards, he knows he can't reach them. They're unreachable. You could have the most emotional conversation with them. You could try and connect with them in so many different ways. For 2 weeks, they are numb. They are numb. Nobody's home. Nobody's home. And also, if you ask them how they're doing, they say, it's all good. It's all good. And don't believe them because it's all good. Meaning, it's exactly that. It's all good. It's all good. There's nothing here that's challenging. It's all good, Rebbe. It's all good. It's all good. Right? These are the types of people that I'll never have a relationship with. People only come to me with problems. I go, how are you doing, Shimon? I go walk in the street with somebody. It's all good, Rebbe. It's all good. It's all good. Be out of a business from such people. Now, what's the pshat? The pshat is stones have no feeling. And it's a malbim. When a person is a stone, he has no feeling. The Malbim says on the pasuk in Yecheskel Yud Aleph Yud Tes, "V'nasati lahem lev echad v'ruach chadasha." I'll give them a heart and a new spirit. V'hasi roisi lev ha'evan. I'll remove their heart of stone mibsarim. V'nasati lahem lev basar. I'm going to take away their heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh, of meat. What does this mean? Says the Malbim, she'ad ata, until now, hayo levavam ke'evan, their heart was stone, she'kasha lefateach ala psuchim v'roshman, you couldn't make any dents in it, you couldn't, everything you tried to say to it and do to it, it just stayed stone cold. V'chein lo hayo mucham lekabo aroshmim elokim, v'tziyurei moser v'chachma, and all the great mashkichim, and all the great books, and tzvarim, and all the great role models, could not help this stone. It was stuck. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's going to remove that lev evan. That lev evan. In the Torah, the word evan is something that's detached, something that can't experience. And basar is something that's very sensitive to all types of experiences, emotional experiences. It's a lev of basar. And it's more than that. It's more than that. Because you're going to think this is a very strange extension, but I have a very big support for it. The Ksav v'Kabbalah, a Talmud of Rabbi Kiva Eger. We know that there's sugyas of rocks in the Torah, right? There's sugyas of rocks. Moshe Rabbeinu, first, in the beginning, the first episode, he hit the rock, and that was a good thing. Then he was supposed to speak to the rock, and he didn't. So what happened over here? He missed a Kiddush Hashem. Says Rashi! You missed the Kiddush Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu. L'hakdi sheni, she'ilu dibartem el ha'sela. If you would have spoken to the rock, v'hotzi ayisi mekudish le'enei ha'eda, there would have been a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. You can talk to a rock. Why? V'omrim. Ma'sela zu she'enu medaber v'enu shomea v'enu tzarech l'parnasa mekayim dibur shel makom. Just like this rock, it can't hear, it can't speak, it doesn't need anything. It's all good. It's a total chill. And all of a sudden, someone says, do something, and it listens. Whoa, the rabbi's serious. He does it. Kal v'chomer anu. For sure, we can. Says the Ksav v'Kabbalah, the Talmud of Rabbi Kiva Eger, okay? In the Ksav v'Kabbalah, and a friend of the Malbim, and you can see that they were friends. They have a very similar Derech HaLimud in how to take apart psukim. He says the following. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's issue? Moshe Rabbeinu knew that this stone represented the stone hearts. And he knew in the first episode that the way to reach a stone is to whack it and whack it and whack it until you get something out of it, because it just doesn't get it. You can talk and talk and talk. It's just not getting it. And then what happened? Over the period of the Midbar, Klal Yisrael developed. And even though Hashem said to whack the stone, but eventually Klal Yisrael became an elevated stone that was about to leave its being a stone. And you could talk to it. And you could talk to it. And Klal Yisrael knew that this stone represents the heart of Klal Yisrael. And if Moshe Rabbeinu would have talked to it, they would have gotten chizuk that they're connected. That they're not stones. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu could reach this stone, he for sure could reach me. Last time it was with a patch, and this time you can talk, and it'll emerge outwards. And we find in Vayetze, the Tzror Hamor, which is a Kabbalistic parish, says Yaakov removed the big stone from the well. He was removing the stone heart. So let's try to understand, because we see that we're born with stone hearts. But what about people who make their hearts stone? Imagine how big their problem is. We're already behind the eight ball, Rabotai. We're already struggling to feel. But people who build the stone and build the stone and numb every experience, they just go through Olam Hazeh and nothing comes of it. Nothing. They may have chosen to become a stone because of conflicts that they have in their family, because of stress, because of sleepless nights. They don't like tossing and turning because they have too many things in their head that they're not happy about. And they toss left and they toss right. And it's just so easy. You pop one of these things. And by the way, that's how it starts. You just pop it and there you go. You wake up in the morning, you're like, wow, how'd that happen? I actually slept last night. And boredom. Boredom. People are afraid to be bored. People are afraid to be bored. Imagine you could take something and feel like being bored is a chill. Wow, look at all the colors. It's gewaldic. So I decided to speak to Rav Chaim Kanievsky about this. I did it. It wasn't a long conversation, but I asked him about this, and I would like to say a teich in what he told me. I asked him, I said, you know, there are all sorts of things like this. We call them in Hebrew samim. So I said, I'd like to get a message from the Gadol Hadar. I didn't call him that in front of him, but basically, what do I tell them? And he said the following words. Samim, drugs, sam hamaves, are the recipe for death. And I'd like to explain, because I think this fits with our Shtickle Torah. The Rambam writes in Hilchus Deis that there are people who don't feel, and the way he describes them, people, you can't get them angry. You could, like, do anything to them. And it's all just good. He says, Eina margish kemes. They don't feel like a dead person. And then I realized this is pshat in the band, The Grateful Dead. I always had a tzarach ian by them. What's the pshat in the name? Right? The Grateful Dead. And then it's pshuta kemashmo. Right? If you have a bong and you create for yourself a society where just it's just dead to the world, nothing is going on, I'm good, then it's all good. And people just go this way. And there's a maisa with Reb Zusha, the Heiliger Reb Zusha. Reb Zusha was one of the great Hasidic masters. And the Rebbe Reb Eli Melech was once approached about how to be makabel difficulties. How can it be that the Torah says kishem that you're mevarech on the toiv, you should be mevarech on the ra? So Reb Eli Melech says you have to go to my brother Reb Zusha to find this out. This is a very famous story, but this is a not so, so famous uptight. And sure enough, he goes to Reb Zusha, and he's living in total poverty, no roof above his head, sackcloth. Yisurin Noirayan, and he says, I'm here to learn about difficult things, how to be Mavarech on difficult things. The Rebbe Reb Eli Melech sent me. And he said, I'm sorry. You came to the wrong address. I don't have problems. Ad Kana Maisa. Now I want you to know, Reb Zusha was a Malach Hashem Tzvakas. Reb Zusha, for 3 days, when he couldn't have any food, on the third day he was starving, he said, thank you, Bari Olam, that I have an appetite. He always found the positive in things. But I'm going to tell you the fear of Rav Chatzkel Levenstein on this Maisa. This is nothing to do with Reb Zusha. This has to do with the danger of such a story. There's a difference. Reb Zusha, we should be a doormat for him in Olam Haba. But this story, listen to where Rav Chatzkel Levenstein's reaction was. When Rav Reuven Fine told him this Maisa, this is the danger that he thought could come out of this Maisa. He said, Gewalt. When he heard the Maisa, he says, that's terrible. Meaning, maybe this Maisa was misquoted, maybe whatever. He said, that's against the whole way HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with us. It's against the relationship we have with Rabbeinu Shalom. He says, we have a relationship with Hashem where things happen that are painful and that feel painful and that we're supposed to feel that way. And he said, he brought the pasuk, Shiftecha u'mishantecha hemi yinachamuni. We say this on Shabbos. Shiftecha, your rod and your leaning post are menachemi. What does that mean? There are times that are a leaning post and there are times that kill, that are hard, that are harsh. And a person has to know that he has to be not detached, but in touch with painful situations. If a person thinks it's all good, then there's nothing to do over here. And Hashem is just playing a practical joke on him. But if a person understands that Hashem has a relationship with him and says, you're a winner, you could pass this. I know, we covered this in class. You know all the answers on the Bechina. I know you do. I hazard with you. It's difficult. Take the test and feel good. Feel the pressure when you study and feel the simcha when you win. It's a different life. It's a different life. There's growing pains. What does it mean? Ein lecha esev. There's no esev. There's no blade of grass that a malach doesn't patch it and say grow. What does that mean? Why are you patching and say, grow, grow, grow? Kibalti from my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Shapira Zatzal, that the only way to grow is through a pain. Why? Because a little blade of grass would just love to stay where it is. It's all good over here. What do you want from my life? I'm good. I didn't kill anybody. Whatever. No. Boom! You can do better. That sting is an opportunity to push him up. It breaks the blade of grass slightly so that it can regenerate more and more and more and more. And if a person would be around listening to what's going on in his life, he would be so deep. And I want to tell you a maisa that's so profound. That's so profound. I want you to listen to this well because I think there's so much amkus in this. It's in the Rav Gusman biography. Rav Gusman was somebody who survived Nazi Germany. And he became a Rosh Yeshiva here in Eretz Yisrael. He was a dayan in his early 20s on the Bezdin of Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski. He was a Goyin Olam. He was a Goyin Olam. And I want you to hear this story about becoming something from pain. There was a kashrus issue where Rav Gusman said that he felt that he could use the old age home across the streets, kashrus, for his bachrim, and they were bringing food from there over to the yeshiva. He held it was good. He checked it out. He thought it was fine. Fine. Suddenly he gets a visit, and there was a bachur who listened in because he saw something interesting was going down. Some young people came over to Rav Gusman while he was learning, and they said, Rav Gusman, this kashrus that you're fond of over here and supporting, it's not a good kashrus. And our kashrus is better. Our kashrus is better. And if you go with us, we're going to put your name on our board, and it's going to look good. We have all these nice, very big gadol hadoras. You're going to be on there, right? And it's going to be great. If you don't, we're going to have to put your name on those types of signs that you know you see all around, that you're not such a great guy, that you're a kal in mitzvos, and that you're not careful with what you do, and that you shouldn't be somebody who's... Who's leading the tzibur. This is what happened. Let's walk in there. Rav Gusman said the following thing to them. He said, you're trying to offer me kavod, on the one hand, I get to be on your side, and you're trying to offer me bizyonos on the other hand. I want you to know something. I want you to know something. It says, when I was in Europe, I walked into a meeting of all the Gedolim of Vilna. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski stood up for me. And he doesn't say this in this particular story, but the Chafetz Chaim stood up because Rav Chaim Ozer stood up. And he said, all the Rabbani Vilna stood up for me. So you see, I can't get your kavod. I have way too much kavod. I got the greatest kavod in the world. Once the Chafetz Chaim stands up for you. And he says, you want to give me a bizayon? I want you to know the following thing. I had one child. His name was Meirka. He was 3 years old and he was the apple of my eye. And he was in my arms when the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, brutally killed him in front of me while I was holding him. And then they threw me and him into a pile of manure. Says, that's the greatest bizayon that anyone could ever experience. So you can't really offer me anything. And I really have to get back to my learning because during the war I missed 5 years of learning. Bye-bye. Went back in. I want to try to understand what happened over here because this was a blip in the life of Rav Gusman, but he let us in on a secret. He let us in on taking life's experiences with us. The richness. Not just, oh yeah, I remember when the Chafetz Chaim stood for me. Carrying it with strength. What it means for today. And carrying such pain and what it means for strength today. You can't blackmail me. You can't touch me. I'm going to sit in my Gemara happy because I went through a painful experience. I became so much bigger than you. And he said, Kinderlach, I forgot that part. He says, kids, bye. Right? He called them kids. That's exactly what they were. Because they didn't have the ability to grow from life's experiences. And right afterwards, in the book, I was shocked. Because when I looked up the story just to say it in yeshiva, I was shocked about this. So this is a matana for making sure just that I had the story accurate. This is the story right afterwards. Rosh Yeshiva once asked a student who smoked cigarettes why he smoked. It's right afterwards. The student replied to calm my nerves. The Rosh Yeshiva remarked, they killed my son in my arms and I don't smoke. But you say that you have nerves that need to be calmed? Now, the Rosh Yeshiva wasn't like trying to rain on people's parade. But he was trying to teach people how to be strong. How not to have band-aids in life. How to gain strength from real achievement, from real movement, from hazoirim bidima birina yiksayru. People who cry eventually end up becoming so much bigger. When I was in America, people asked me about spoiled children. You know, at the Shabbos Achtos for yeshiva. So what I like to do is not answer the question. I like to throw them another possibility. They said, what do we do with the generation that's spoiled? What do we do with the generation that's spoiled? So you have to make it interesting. So you can't agree with their questions. So I said, who says that this generation's spoiled? Why are they spoiled? You're spoiled. You're spoiled. Why is your kid spoiled? So I said, I'll tell you the problem that's going on. And people came up to me afterwards and said this changed their chinuch. So I'm giving it to you before you even have children. So this is a big matana. People see their kids cry at an ice cream store. They wanted two scoops and you're only letting one scoop. They're like, right? They make a big scene like, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, right? So what's happening over here? The kid's spoiled? No. The kid is very disappointed. The kid thought he was getting two scoops. In his life, this is like two scoops. One scoop is like, it might as well come for free. Like, you know, you're just getting started at one scoop. He's disappointed. I told them, you're not letting your children deal with disappointment. Every time they get upset, you assume something's wrong with them. You know what's kedai? Let them cry. Let them be upset. You just want to throw an iPad at them. They never have to, there's nobody who needs to deal with plane rides anymore, by the way. Parents, it used to be the biggest nightmare to take your kids on the plane. No, now it's not. It's like, let's go to, we're here in Israel. Okay. This is what's happening. I'm not joking. It's mamish what's happening. The parents can't tolerate it. And the kids never have to deal with anything. They're numbing themselves. They're numbing their children. I had an incident this week, Rav Osai. One of my children, okay? If you saw me very tired, you know why, okay? This is the maisa that made me very tired. What happened? One of my kids, my youngest child, saw a costume book with different types of paros, costumes. This is not a good thing, okay? Paro's in the house, Paro's coming, where's Paro? We had nights, okay? I couldn't believe her strength. 1 hour of sleep through the night. That's all she needed. Aside from that, it was Paro this, Paro that. Ah, Paro, Paro, you're Paro! Everybody's Paro, right? We were literally going out of our kalim. We were going out of our kalim, and my wife had to take care of this while I was sleeping so nicely. So on the third night, I had extra strength because she was busy taking care of it. I said, okay, here's what we're doing. We actually called somebody who was an expert because we knew this was dangerous material. We spoke to somebody we hold up very, very much. And what happened? I said to her, young lady, Paro's not in the house. I'm right outside this door, but we're not coming in. I'm leaving the door open, but Paro's not here, and you're just fine. The night before, I found the costume thing and I did a ripping session. I started ripping Paro up. I figured if he's in there, she thought he was in there, right? Okay, it was brutal. She goes, Abba, I need you, right? This is going on for 45 minutes. I was having a chavrusa with an Adam Gadol in my study, and I asked him to daven for me. I did. He was so worried, he called me later in the night. He's like, it was very, very hard. He's like, so I was trying to hold cup, and I'm like, then she felt, maybe we don't know she's crying. She goes, Mommy, I'm crying! Like to announce the hello shame of crying. Like if everyone doesn't know, this is called crying, right? Fine. Then after 45 minutes of this, she woke up once in the night, a little bit scared. That's it. It's gone. It's gone. Why? She was able to deal with something. When you know that there's no Band-Aid, that Mommy and Abba are not going to come in, that's when you start getting strong. That's when things start happening. That's when things start moving. Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel Zatzal said, Achrayus macht godless. That taking responsibility makes godless. And I want you to know, any person who's stuck is a person who grows. I read once that Art Scroll, which I'm a very big fan just of the accomplishment. I can't believe that a group of people translated the entire Shas and did such a wonderful job. I love it. I don't learn from an Art Scroll, but I love the accomplishment. I also have a very big appreciation of the English language. And I know the challenge of finding the right word. I'm amazed from an accomplishment that people could do such a thing. And Rav Meir Zlatowitz, that's all, said that if they ever knew how difficult it would be to do the Shas, they never would have done it. So what's the pshat? They got stuck, right? People are throwing you millions of dollars and saying, make it happen. They're like, okay, we're going to die if we don't put this out. And this is what happens to people who are stuck. They start growing. And I think there's a certain onus in the incentives that we have in yeshiva. Because I give my son incentives, but they're not as effective. I tell him for Shnayim Mikra, right? I tell him, Shnayim Mikra, you get a certain amount of money every week you do Shnayim Mikra. He's not chayav to do Shnayim Mikra, and people don't, I want him to be by his bar mitzvah, ruggle in it, and he can decide if he wants to, he gets that money. If he doesn't, he doesn't, right? It's up to him, it's up to him. But the incentives we have in yeshiva are so much more painful. Do you know why? Because you stick yourself in a situation where at this point, you just want out. And you have a financial commitment. And you have certain levels of embarrassment. And you can't. People tell me they don't want to get out of bed. They do not want to go out of bed. And they think that that's the bust in incentives. By me, that's exactly what incentives were created for. For the first time, you're going to hate getting up and get up. Because every other time you were a little baby. And you only did things you wanted to do. When it was a good chill. And the people who start doing this become real role models, become really dependable, become really strong in a way that if you're in a place where they only have you do whatever you want to do, you'll always remain a coward. Always. Because your wife needs you and your kids need you and you're not down and you don't have the strength that was created from these obligations. You don't have it in you. And some sometimes it's really difficult to learn. And when we have to learn, big things happen. I'm going to leave you with this maysa from the Shomer Emunim. This is Rav Arla, the Hasidim, the Toldos Aharon Hasidim. Rav Arla writes this about himself. He says, I'm going to tell you what happened to me. He says, I fell into a nisayon where I hated learning worse than death. Said I would rather die than learn. This is what happened to him. Anytime I would see anything that had to do with learning, I would rather die. And he said he didn't know what to do. He was running around. He davened at a tzaddik and at tzaddik's kever. And something occurred to him that he's going to take the next sefer that he sees and he's going to learn it. I don't know what kind of design this was, but it was very serious. And Rav Arla picked up the rush on mikvos. No, not the rush on mikvos. It's too hard. And he said, I'm not leaving here even if I die. I'm going to finish the rush on mikvos. And he sat there and learned. And he hated it. He hated it. Until by the time he was done, the nisayon was over. And he went back to it. And I want you to know, and you're going to think I'm crazy for saying this, but I was just speaking to a friend of mine in America who's a big Talmud Chacham and a big Mechanech. He says, do you notice that everyone's always talking about enjoying learning? When am I going to enjoy learning? This learning, enjoying this, enjoying that, enjoying. We didn't talk about that when we were Bachrim. You know what we did? We just learned. Do you know why we learned? Because we're supposed to learn. Once we decided we wanted to be good, we said, this is what you do. No one cared if you... It was rewarding because it was what you were supposed to do. It's not Xanax. Learning is not supposed to be something that at a certain point, Gemara, Sukkah, Yevamos, Tainus. It doesn't do that. And it's enjoyable because it makes you strong. And then it'll become enjoyable. But we don't do things because they're enjoyable. We don't even wait for that. We do things that are rewarding and right. And we try to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us so many ways to connect. He gave us, like Rabbi Victor Miller said, sometimes the only yetzer for a bacher is to go across the street and buy a piece of chocolate cake. Chocolate cake's gewaltig. Cookies are gewaltig. Sunlight. I want you to know, I saw this Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that if someone doesn't know why they should live, a zakin, a very old man, they don't understand what the purpose is of living, he says, Reb Yid, you should live because of the enjoyment of the light of the sun. The light of the sun will get you through. You notice that old people sit in the park and do that? And I was thinking about it, and I want you to know, when I have a stressful day, which comes pretty often, I leave Bein HaSdarim, and I go outside, and I just start looking at the sky, and looking at the sun, not at the sun itself, but at the reflection of the sun, and I'm changed. I go on a walk like that. Hashem put in the world beautiful, natural ways for people who are not deadheads, for people who are not stones, to cope and have tremendous simchas hachayim. And we should all be zochet to have this strength and be zochet to go be'emes mechayel ochayim.